everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food here on a frozen January 28th, 2014. And we're going to warm you up today because we're going to be talking about soup. And soup is really exciting, and you're going to find out just why that is in a few seconds, okay? I want to bring on my first guest, Mark Reinfeld. He's been on this program a number of times, and he has a new cookbook out. It's called The 30-Minute Vegan Soups On. He is an award-winning chef and author or co-author of 6 books, including Vegan Fusion World Cuisine, The 30-Minute Vegan, The 30-Minute Vegan's Taste of the East, The 30-Minute Vegan's Taste of Europe, and both Vegetarian Times and Veg News named them to their top cookbooks of 2012 list. He offers culinary trainings and tours worldwide and online at veganfusion.com, and he lives in Hawaii. Mark, welcome back to It's All About Food.
Hey, Karen. It's great to be back. Thank
Are you in Hawaii right now?
I actually just relocated to Miami Beach. So
we'll have to change that bio.
That just occurred to last week, so...
Okay.
From tropic to tropic, yeah.
Miami Beach. It's not as warm there.
It's pretty warm here, not to compare with what you guys have up there, but
it's cold for Miami, I bet.
Yes.
Yeah. People get their fur coats out around this time in Miami. And I'm not promoting fur.
They like bundling up.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, so you're a little closer by, so there's probably some good business for you down there.
Yes. I just finished actually one of those 10-day training and a teacher training here that I offer around the country, showing people how fun and easy it is to include plants in their diet and lifestyle.
Right. Well, one of the things that I like that you wrote in the very beginning of the book, I'm looking for it here. I should have opened the book and prepared myself for it. But, yeah, page 2, Recipes for Peace. And I love what you say, that the time we spend inside the kitchen can serve as a metaphor for life outside the kitchen. Let's just talk about that for a minute, because I'm always telling people to find their kitchen. It's like something we've lost. We don't know how to make our food.
Yeah, I think it's a big step towards healing and taking our health back into our own hands if we can prepare food ourselves. And it's really my passion to show people how easy that can be, and so I do feel like it's the skills that you learn in the kitchen, like being present with what you're doing, especially when you're handling a knife, and just focusing on positive things in your life and being grateful for having access to the food and being able to prepare it. Those qualities really overflow into your life outside of the kitchen.
I know a lot of people feel stressed when they're in the kitchen, and primarily it's because they don't know what they're doing. And just like so many things, if we want to be good at anything, we need to practice. We didn't learn to walk overnight.
That's right. And I really encourage students in my classes to maintain a positive attitude. And I heard a great story about a positive attitude. A friend, close friend, won a handball tournament. And when he made it, when he got a point, he said, "Good shot," and when he missed the shot, he would say, "Nice try." So that's the idea of good shot, nice try, good shot. You just keep moving forward with that positive attitude, and don't beat yourself up if you miss a recipe ingredient or something like that. There's usually a way to correct it, and like you said, with practice, I feel that all of us can really become amazing chefs.
Well, you don't have to divulge any of your bad stories, but, I mean, how many times have you been in the kitchen and things didn't work out quite right, and then you made it into something else?
Right. Like, sometimes I would leave out, like, a small ingredient in baking, like the leavening or something like that, and I would just be left with, like, a solid mass of chocolate or something, and then you could just cut it up and put it in a parfait glass and make some vegan whipped cream and serve it as a nice parfait.
Right. Now, one of the nice things in this book is you break apart the components of soup. And for some of us who've been making soup for a long time, we don't even think that way. We just throw it all in a pot and it happens. But for people that are starting out, it's really good to think about the pieces, because as you mentioned, once you understand all of those pieces, that kind of frees you up to be a little flexible if you don't have one ingredient or another.
Right. I like to call that it's a template, looking at recipes as a template. So by breaking it down like that, and you see like there's like a main vegetable part, there's a part that would give it creaminess, there's a part that may be an ethnic spice blend, one part could be the stock, and by changing each of those parts, you can create a new recipe. So I really, in the book, there may be 100 or so recipes, but there's really thousands of recipes contained in the book, and I'm promoting it as vegan soups for the chicken soul to show people just how satisfying it could be to work with fresh vegetables and fruits and grains and nuts and seeds to create these delicious soups.
Okay, once again, we learn that vegan food is not deprivation. It is not boring. And we're just talking about soup right now. And in this one book, there's over 100 versions, and they're all pretty different. So there's lots of variety.
Now, yes, and I also included a section on raw soups, which is the new raw food cuisine is like the cutting edge in the vegan food scene. And so there's a whole section on raw soups that you could have as chilled soups during the summer, also dessert soup. So it's a real broad spectrum of vegan soup preparation.
Now, soup, I don't know. It depends on the culture, of course. But I think in our society, soup gets a bad rap a lot of the time. It's a food that a lot of people relate to what people eat when they're poor. Or the old-fashioned stories that we hear or see in movies, the poor people adding the water and thinning the soup, and they have like one bone and one thing. But soup is not a poor food.
Well, I like to, you just brought to mind the idea of a stone soup, which is a funny story about adding stones, of how you can create soups really from anything, and it can be taken to a very high level of gourmet cuisine, and that's something that I really strive for, is for people to have this really world-class, very high-level gourmet experience with meals and recipes that take 30 minutes or less. So that's the underlying idea behind the 30-minute vegan series.
Now, I love soup, and you can see there's so many different kinds in your book. Dr. Furman, for example, who's my favorite medical doctor, is always encouraging people on their basic, simple diet to eat a lot of bean-based soups and salads. And, of course, there are plenty of them in here, and it's really inexpensive, and there's so many different beans and so many different ways you can have a bean-based soup, but so filling and so good for you. Then I remember living in the south of France, and all the soups were served at, like a puree with some kind of cream base, always in addition to a meal. It was never the whole meal. And then something that always like gets me excited are these Vietnamese noodle-based soups, these giant bowls full of all kinds of fun things. And these are completely different soups.
It's a vast spectrum. You can definitely go the full gamut, and some, like, the difference also between a soup and a stew, say, is it's like generally a stew would have less liquid content, so you can go from almost like a really light broth-based soup to just a heartier stew. So I like the idea of just the soup for every season and really every climate. So now with the winter months upon us, like having those heartier stews and bean soups, like there's just a world of variety possible.
Now, when I eat in a restaurant, soup is typically something that I don't care to order. Mm-hmm. And it's mostly because it's full of salt.
Right.
And some restaurants, it tends to be like a cheap item somehow. Mm. Not good ingredients, lots of salt, and I love soup, but I rarely order it in a restaurant.
Well, this will, you can go home after your restaurant experience and make a midnight snack of some of the soup from the fest.
That's right. I can't tell you how many times we've done that. We go out to eat and we come home and say, okay, what are we really going to eat? Oh, yeah. Okay, so you're helping people get over their fear and get into the kitchen and learn how to make many, many wonderful soups. Now, you mentioned the desserts and the raw soups, and I want to talk about those a little bit. I remember first seeing a dessert soup on a restaurant menu, and I had never thought about soup as a dessert. And I have to say, there's something, it doesn't, like, compute to me, and yet I'll have a smoothie or something, which is really a dessert soup, only it's served in a glass instead of a bowl.
Right, and there's different ways you could present. Like, there, one way is you do little, you could even do little, like, shot glasses type of soup. So it's more like a liquid dessert. So there's, like, an almond milk-based chocolate soup or, a watermelon-lime soup that would just have the fruit and fruit juices blended. And we can make, fruit creams using soaked cashews. So it is just that, getting that sweet satisfaction at the end of a meal in the form of a soup. So you could have it as a big bowl or just, in a little shot glass as, the finishing touch on a meal.
Now, I was raw for a couple of years, around 2004, 2005, and I did venture into making a number of different raw soups, and I have to say I haven't really made too many since I've gone back to eating some raw and some cooked, and I don't know why that's happened, because especially looking in your book here, there are some really lovely things that I know people can eat year-round, but especially in the warm weather, a raw soup can be very nice.
I feel my niche is introducing people to the full spectrum of vegan cuisine, from the heavier comfort foods like lasagna and enchilada casserole, things like that, all the way into the raw food world, which is usually lighter. And so everyone has their own optimal percentage, I think, of raw food. So that varies over time and by climate and environment and the season of life that we're in. So I think just making an effort to include those fresh fruits and vegetables in whatever ratio feels appropriate at that time is a good kind of guiding light with our food choices.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm looking at some of the pictures in the middle of the book, because the middle of the book has all the colored pictures, and they're gorgeous. I want to say that photographing soup, not many people think about this, but it's not an easy thing to do.
Well, food photography in general, for anyone who's tried, if you get 2 or 3 shots out of 100, you feel like you did a good job. So there's a lot of, the photographer actually is this woman, Amaya Green, who did the photography for our first book, the Vegan Fusion World Cuisine book, and she's really gifted. I'm very, very happy with how the photos came out.
Yeah, they're beautiful. The thing about soup is it's really hard to see what's in them because they're usually in a deep bowl, and with the photography, you need to enhance some of what's in it by putting it on top so we can appreciate what's in it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a challenging thing. Something that I love to do, you have a curried pumpkin soup, and I love filling squashes with food, either stews or soups.
Yes.
It's so festive. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, I like getting creative with the presentation. One thing I like emphasizing also is this idea of food as art. So it's just another form of creative expression, and nature provides us with this palette of colors and textures and flavors that we can work with. So usually the meal begins with the eyes, so I like to create a really beautiful visual before people even taste the food.
Now, the broth is challenging, and when people are used to making soup and they're not vegetarian, they usually just reach for a can of chicken broth.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the big flavor in there is salt.
Right. That posed an interesting challenge because in developing the recipes, I want people to be able to follow the recipe and have it turn out amazing. So adding a stock really enhances the flavor, and at the same time, there's such a range of stocks available in aseptic packages or powdered broth or bouillon. So I used water as the main base and then worked on flavoring the water with the spices and herbs and the vegetables themselves. But I also list some stock, basic stock recipes. And an easy way for people to have that base flavor is just to save their vegetable clippings. And if you can't fill a stock pot in 1 day or 2 days, you could keep a bowl or a pot in the freezer and just add your clippings as you go. And then when you get about 6 cups or so, 6 to 8 cups of vegetable trimmings, then you can prepare the stock yourself. And I explain how easy that is. And students in my classes really, that's one of the big tips they walk away with, to see how easy that is.
Yeah, it is easy. I don't like wasting food, and I live in an apartment, and I don't compost at this point in time.
Right.
Some people may not care about throwing away food or waste, but I don't like it. And the wonderful thing about soup is you can practically throw everything in it. You talk about your herbs that you can chop the stems in as well. They've got tons of flavor. Maybe the French wouldn't do that, but...
they'll use herbs as well. I actually, interestingly enough, just had a Cordon Bleu graduate take my 10-day training, and so I was able to pick up on some things, and he approved of my stock creation method. So
good.
You could use a lot. There's a wide range of stocks that you can create.
Okay. Let's see. This happens from time to time where I have something on the tip of my tongue and then I swallow it. I forget it. Oh, okay. I think my favorites are the Asian noodle soups, the Vietnamese noodle soups especially. And, you know, before I said I don't order soup in a restaurant, except there is an exception, and that is I've found a few restaurants actually in San Jose, California that make some wonderful noodle soups that I just love. And I just found a restaurant in Manhattan that made it to my specification, which is a place called Wild Ginger. There's a few of them in Manhattan. But still best to make it, I think, for yourself at home, and you have some great recipes in here to do that too.
Yeah, and the noodles are another way that you could change the flavor of the dishes. There's rice noodles and buckwheat noodles that you can use for to create different flavored noodle-based soups. And I also include a section on creamy vegan soups, and that's really, to me, where the vegan soups shine, because they really taste like they have dairy in them. And
right.
So there's numerous techniques that we use, like adding cashews or macadamia nuts, either raw or toasted, and blending that in to create a creaminess. You can also use plant-based milks like coconut milk or almond milk or soy milk to create this creaminess. And I would say pretty much every recipe in the creamy vegan soup section of the book, you would be really hard-pressed to see, tell that there was no dairy in it.
Oh, yeah, I know that. And it's just convincing the world that
preaching to the choir.
Yeah, really. No, I mean, I didn't mean to say that in a smug way or anything. It's just, yes, underline, I know that, and everyone else needs to know it, because this food is not only better for us, it's kinder and gentler on the planet. And, you know, people who think they can't live without milk and butter and cheese, well, you can. And, Mark, you're doing it for us right here in this one little book.
Well, I like that you mentioned that, because to me it does go beyond the food aspect to the implications of these food choices. And it is my real strong passion to show people that having a plant-based diet and lifestyle is not only amazing for their health, but also the benefit to the environment, and just to eliminate some of the more atrocious things that are going on right now in the forms of factory farming and just the kind of pollution and violence that's involved in the factory farming method, you can really create this incredible cuisine without sacrificing or compromising, and it has all those extra added benefits that you mentioned.
Yep. We just want to make it, we want to get rid of all the excuses. People have so many excuses. There's no room for excuses. Not with all this great food out there.
Yeah, and it's just like a way of doing our part to create this, and a lot of people to create this kind of more harmonious existence. And a lot of people are aware of the benefits of plant-based cuisine and just are not sure on how to go about doing it. And so that's what I feel like my mission is to fill that gap of the how-to portion of it. So I have an online training through my website, and also I just travel internationally offering these longer immersions and write the cookbooks just to show people that if you've heard about plant-based cuisine and you've heard about the benefits but may not be sure how to start or what to do, like, I really like showing people how easy it is and how transformative it is for them to take these steps themselves.
Right on. So people can find you at veganfusion.com, right?
Definitely, yes. That's the website, and we do put out a newsletter where I'll send out some recipes and upcoming events and tours that I'm offering.
Okay, sounds delicious. And
cool.
It's good to hear that you're based a little closer to us now.
Yeah, I'm doing a training in New York in March and another training in Miami in October. So I'll be based on the East Coast now, so I'll be offering more events down here.
Okay, well, we're glad to have you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Mark. I love this new book. I'm a big soup fan, and I can't wait to dig in a little more to it.
Please let me know how you like it. Thank you.
I will.
Okay, take care.
Okay, be well.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, that was Mark Reinfeld, and all of his 30-Minute Vegan books are very useful, very informative, and very delicious. So there were a few things I wanted to talk about before we take a break and move on to my next guest. So there are a few things in the news I think are worth mentioning. Have you heard about the genetically modified purple tomatoes? Right. I just read about them, and there are so many things that just make me smile or make me mad. Guess what this one does to me? So it seems there was a British scientist who went to Canada to work on this purple tomato, because in Great Britain they're not too genetically modified food friendly. And I didn't know that Canada was, but apparently they're working together in Ontario. New Energy Farms is putting out the purple tomato, and what's interesting about the purple tomato, okay, is it has been modified in order to create anthocyanin, an antioxidant, which has been shown in animal studies to help fight cancer. The interesting thing is this item is found in fruits like blueberries, but for some reason they thought people might like it better in a purple tomato? Who doesn't like blueberries? This is something that I don't understand. No, but I do understand, because when you create a genetically modified food, you can patent it. And when you patent something, then you have the rights to it, and you can make a lot more money than from the simple foods that have been offered to us by nature. It's kind of hard to patent those things. And I would really love to see our governments support the production of really healthy foods so everybody could have lots of blueberries. Blueberries are kind of expensive, but they're really worth it. And I don't know any children who turn down blueberries or a lot of berries. They're always a very welcome, lovely, natural treat. Purple tomatoes? Now, I wouldn't mind a heritage version of tomatoes, you know, all of those funny shaped yellow and orange and all kind of purpley red tomatoes. Those are all great. But genetically modified, the thing about genetically modified foods is, number one, we don't know if they're safe. I'm not saying they're not safe. We just don't know. So let's say that they are. Let's say that there isn't a problem with technology by putting in these specific genes into from one planet to another. Let's say there's nothing wrong with that and we can do it well. What's wrong is that genetically modified foods encourage us to use all of the bad agricultural systems and processes, including using pesticides and herbicides, toxic chemicals that we put into the earth. And it also encourages monocropping. It also encourages large companies owning seeds and having us have to buy seeds. Now, the interesting thing about our culture these days is more and more we're specialized in everything we do. I mean, just think about it. In order to get our energy and our water, it's a great thing. We now are part of a big grid, and we all plug in and get our electricity. Sure, we pay for it month to month, but it's a hell of a lot easier than trying to figure out ways to provide our own energy so that we can heat our homes and run our appliances and use our phones, right? And it's great that we are able to get water from our faucets and use pretty much as we need. Now, there's a whole other subject about whether that water is good to use, and I prefer to distill my water and filter my water, but it's great to be able to have access to it. And these are the things that we benefit from technology and living in community. But in order to do that, we need to have certain companies manage these things, and we pay for that service. And it looks like a certain few number of corporations want to do that with our food, where they control the seeds, where they control our food supply. And I love the conveniences and benefits I get from certain sorts of technology and improvement. I'm uncomfortable with my food supply being controlled. Now, if I could, I really wish I could grow my own food, and I think more and more of us should be finding ways to do that, especially because as things become more complex and energy becomes more expensive, being able to access food from local areas is, I think, going to be what's going to be necessary in the long term. And thinking about if there was some sort of crisis of one sort or another and things shut down, where would our food be coming from? I don't like to create these gloom and doom pictures, but it is something to think about. And when I think about genetically modified food, I think about companies trying to control our food supply, and that makes me uncomfortable. So I'm not excited to hear about purple tomatoes, but if you try one, let me know what you think. How about that? And we were talking about soup today with Mark Reinfeld. I want to let you know I just posted on my Responsible Eating and Living website a new Tom Kha soup. That's a Thai coconut-based soup. It's one of these soups that I love, love, love. And the challenging thing is when you go to most Thai restaurants, even if you ask for the food to be vegetarian, they usually slip in a little fish sauce into it because most of them don't equate fish to not being vegetarian. And the only real way to get it the way you like it is to make it, which is something I did the other day and just posted the recipe. And I'm really excited because it's one of my favorite soups, and it's great to be able to make it at home. And then another thing I wanted to encourage or just think about. We're a very internet-based society today, and I know myself, I love to buy most things online, and I'm limiting more and more my face-to-face community interaction with real people. Now, occasionally, I have to go to the post office, although I try to avoid it at all costs. And did you know that postage just went up again? It's now 49 cents to mail a letter. and occasionally, I have to go into my banks, even though I try to do most of my banking online. But when I talk to an individual face-to-face, sometimes I'm really surprised. And I've had a few of these experiences recently where one of the bankers asked about my business. I told them about responsibility and living. They were interested, and that opens up a whole dialogue, and I start giving my plant food lecture, and more often than not, the people are receptive. I learn about how little people know about food, which is always surprising to me, and I'm always happy to give them information. My point is, we were taught as kids not to talk to strangers. I think as adults, we can kind of intuit who the strangers are that are safe to talk to. But it's really good to open up to people and let them know about plant foods any way we can, certainly sharing that information with friends and family. I was in a food store a few weeks ago, and a woman just started asking me about apple juice. And with the door open, I managed to turn her attention away from apple juice and over to the dark leafy green section in the produce section, telling her how important those greens are. Right. Anyway, if you have any questions or concerns about food, please email me at info@realmeals.org, info@realmeals.org, and we can have a conversation. Right now, I'm going to finish my green juice. We'll take a little break and be back with Jonathan Balcombe. We're going to be talking about the inner lives of animals.